From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. House Democrats, fresh from their victory in the midterm elections, are gearing up an ambitious new bill as one of their first acts in the new congressional year, an anti-corruption bill. H.R. 1 is an ambitious and multi-part piece of legislation that tackles the influence of wealthy corporate donors on our elections, puts in place generous public campaign financing, holds the executive branch to high ethical standards, and restores parts of the Voting Rights Act. Representatives John Sarbanes, Nancy Pelosi, and Terry Sewell introduced the details of the anti-corruption package on Friday morning. They were joined by a number of newly elected Democrats, including Veronica Escobar, Ilhan Omar, and others. Joining me to discuss this bill is Morris Pearl, chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, which is a group of hundreds of high-net-worth Americans committed to progressive financial policies. Welcome to the program, Morris.
Great to be in your show, Sonali.
So this, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. There's many things that the Democrats could have taken up, and I'm sure there'll be some that aren't happy that they didn't do something else. But for the most part, to come out of the gate with an ambitious multi-part bill that almost challenges Republicans, you know, to vote it down do so at their peril is quite heartening. Is it to you as well?
I think this is great. I think it's wonderful that they're trying to empower the people who don't have so much money to really get engaged in our politics.
It seems as though a big part or the central part of this bill is to undermine the influence of big money in our elections. There is, in this particular election and the election before it, we've seen so much influence from so-called dark money, a lot of it going back to Citizens United, and every election seems to have more and more influence from big donors. So as far as you can tell, how would this bill undermine or attempt to undermine the influence of big money in our elections?
Look, I'd really like to get people's big money out of politics, especially my own money. But what this bill is doing is kind of like what we're doing here in New York. Instead of going to a few people who have thousands and thousands of dollars to donate, or even hundreds of thousands, what people in New York do that already have a law similar to this is they go to a few hundred people, they give just $100 or $200, then they get matching funds. So if you give $175 to somebody who's running for mayor of New York, that's like getting $1,000 or $2,000. And so they don't need to go to people who have thousands of dollars. They can go to a large number of people that have just a couple hundred bucks.
So this is the state level public financing law that you're referring to in New York?
Yeah. Actually, city level, The New York City mayor and city council members and a few other offices. But it's worked very well in New York. It's really changed the face of city council here in New York. And it's worked great because you don't have to be the brother-in-law or the best friend of a real estate developer to be in the New York City Council anymore. A few people are, and we've nothing against that, but the vast majority of people running for office have taken advantage of this matching fund system, and with it, spending caps and donation caps, and they've been able to get elected with just a couple hundred thousand dollars and a few hundred donors. And that's really been very good for New York. Mm-hmm.
So the Democratic Party, which has also been accused of sort of playing the big money game, because if you can't beat them, join them, I suppose, has been the logic under this bill, are saying that there would be a federal government campaign finance match, public financing match of 6-1, which is incredibly generous. So if somebody were to raise $1,000, they would be matched with $6,000 from the federal government. That's very generous.
Well, yeah, that's essentially how it's done here in New York. The idea is that currently they're going to people who are giving a maximum of $2,700. So the idea is that not a lot of people can give $2,700 to politics. I do, but not everyone does. But a lot of people can give $200 or $500. So I think that's what it's doing. It's enabling the people running for office to depend on the small dollar donors and not have to suck up to these big dollar donors all the time. The problem isn't that they're bad people. The problem is they spend all of their time trying to raise more money because they're scared. They're scared of the other guy having more money than they do. And they're scared of not having enough money. And they've been taught that by all these media consultants who get paid commissions for selling television advertising. And so they think, oh my God, I can't get elected if I don't raise more and more and more and more money. And so this gives them a way to raise enough money and have a spending cap without having to go to these big dollar donors all the time.
Another part of this quite large multi-part legislation is to pass the Disclose Act, which would require super PACs and dark money political organizations to make their donors public. This looks like Congress finally at least taking on in part the Supreme Court's very destructive Citizens United decision.
Well, the Democrats have been supporting the Disclose Act for years. They know they haven't been in the majority yet, though. So I think it's finally an opportunity for it to pass at least the House of Representatives. But yeah, I don't think there's any reason why people have to be able to spend money anonymously. I tell people know which side I'm on. And I think it's perfectly reasonable that if you're going to put a lot of money into electoral politics, people should at least know who's paying for it.
The Supreme Court used the logic of money is equivalent to speech, and because our free speech is protected, corporate money is protected. But the free speech rights in our Constitution say nothing about having your money be secret, right? Or having the source of your money be secret.
Right. I mean, people can spend money, and people can spend money to do more speaking. They can publish things or buy TV ads or whatever they want to, but they have to disclose who they are. And in the advertisements, it seems reasonable that there should be some disclosure of who's paying for it. So we know if it's, you know, public school teachers paying for something or if it's Russian oligarchs paying for something, that might make a difference to somebody.
Another part of the legislation is the Honest Ads Act, which is encompassed in this, which takes on the issue of social media corporations and their influence in our elections. The last couple of elections in particular, and of course, especially the 2016 election, brought to light the ways in which insidious forces have used platforms like Facebook and Twitter to put forward misinformation through their so-called dark ads. And this piece of legislation, H.R. 1, the anti-corruption bill that the Democrats are championing, would force Facebook and Twitter to disclose the source of the money spent on political ads. It's almost sort of daring these social media companies to come forward and do it, right? Facebook and Twitter don't need to keep this a secret.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think we've heard a lot about what's been happening to them. We've seen these examples of rich people getting fake accounts, or even not fake accounts, but getting people on both sides of an argument to stir up just more contention. Some of those contentious arguments in the Twitters and the Facebooks were actually with people being paid by one side on both sides of the argument just to try to stir up more contention. And I mean, I guess they have a right to do that. We can't prevent them from doing that, but I think we can make them disclose who's doing this. And you can see, oh, these are actually paid advertisements on both sides of this issue. What on earth is this?
Morris, I'm wondering if this act would also, if it were to pass, go a long way towards renewing the public's faith in elections. There's just tremendous amount of voter apathy, and you can't really blame voters because they feel and see that their votes don't matter because they feel and see the big money influence in politics. There was a Pew Research poll earlier this year that showed that nearly two-thirds of Americans think that new laws would be effective in reducing the role of money in politics. I can't imagine that the public wouldn't support such a bill as H.R. 1.
Well, I think you're right. I think I don't think anyone will go public and say they're against these reforms. I think some people will sort of quietly oppose them. But I think that what the House leadership has to do is they have to demonstrate to the American people that it does make a difference. They really are getting different policies with different leaders, and there really is a difference. And which side is in control really does make a difference in people's lives. I think that's what they have to do.
The other aspect of this bill is to restore some teeth to the Office of Government Ethics. We heard in the very first few months of the Trump administration, the very high-profile resignation of Walter Shaub, who headed that office or was a high-profile member of that office. And Trump, I think more so than any president in recent memory, has laid waste to ethical standards. And the fact that he himself is a, you know, just so symbolic of the influence of big money in politics, despite what he says and despite his populist rhetoric, it really seems like there's no better time than now to restore those ethics standards in government, right?
I hope so. I mean, the basic position of the Trump administration is that everyone's unethical. We just are more open about being unethical. And I think we have to convince the American people that's wrong, that there actually are plenty of people in government and in our political bodies that who do want to act ethically, who are honest people. And it's simply not true that everyone is unethical.
How important is this aspect of the bill, H.R. 1, that would require the president to disclose his or her tax returns? Currently, it's just accepted practice, but not legally required, which is why Trump has been able to get away without disclosing his tax returns, because there's no law actually forcing him to do so.
Well, I mean, yes, I think it's a good idea. Frankly, I don't think it will make that much difference whether Trump's tax returns are disclosed or not. I think everyone knows that Trump and the Trump family pays very little taxes. So I think actually seeing the tax returns, I don't know what difference that will make to anybody. People who supported Trump still will, I mean, whether he pays taxes or not. And the people who are, you know, for the other side still will be. So I don't think it'll make a huge difference in the world. But yes, I think it should be done.
The bill also would stop members of Congress from using taxpayer money to settle sexual harassment cases or buy first-class plane tickets. Now, the first-class plane tickets part of it especially is something that members of the Trump administration, such as Scott Pruitt, former EPA head, have been accused of doing. He cited security needs for requiring first-class plane tickets. And you've seen just one after the other members of the Trump administration, the people he's installed into government, who really feel that the government, that taxpayer money is like their personal piggy bank.
He should hire people. I mean, any president should hire people who don't feel that taxpayer money is their personal piggy bank. I think there's a concept of being a fiduciary, and that means managing other people's money and spending your own money. Sure, buy first class plane tickets or whatever you want. When you're spending somebody else's money, you have to spend it on what is important to them. And it doesn't do the taxpayers any good for the EPA administrator to be traveling first class, or what he got in trouble for was actually chartering private planes to fly around the country. And yeah, I mean, is it a huge amount of money? No, but it, symbolically, I think it's an important thing, because it's saying that people who are in the public trust, who are entrusted with the public money, are supposed to spend it for the public benefit, not for their own benefit. And I think that's important.
It was an interesting aside. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos on Fox Business Network complained about the teachers' union having a stranglehold on many of the politicians in this country, both at the federal level and the state level. Isn't DeVos very much part of the moneyed class in this country that actually has much greater stranglehold over politics?
I certainly think so. I mean, somehow they've tried to convince people that all of the problems in our country are caused by the teachers' unions. And, you know, that's simply not true. I think we need representation of people who actually believe in public education in our country. The idea that people, rich people should pay for their own kids' education in private schools or charter schools, and that everyone else should do whatever. I mean, that's just not the way, that's not what made our country great. Our country became great when everybody got a public education, and the rich people and the poor people's kids went to school together and got to know each other, and the parents knew each other, and we were one society. The kind of society where the rich people are behind big iron fences and iron gates and send their kids to private schools, and everyone else we don't care about, that's not what made America great.
A huge important and a very important aspect of H.R. 1, this anti-corruption bill that the Democrats have unveiled, focuses on voting rights, which I think is really interesting and remarkable that they are combining these sort of ethics issues and the campaign financing issues with voting rights. Very ambitious part of the bill would create a new national automatic voter registration system that opts all voters in and requires them to opt out of being registered to vote. I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer, but we have in this country wealthy interests in particular that seem to feel like the bigger the voting pool, the worse it is for our country. But this bill would do the opposite. How important is this?
Well, I think that's very important too. They're basically, I mean, they're right in that the more people that vote, the worse off they will be in their own short-term self-interested way, because there's a huge part of the country that believes it should be more difficult to vote and there should be more barriers and only people that really want to vote should be able to vote. And yeah, that's not right. What we believe is that there should be an expanded ability to vote and that everyone should vote and everyone's vote should count and everyone's opinion should count. And you're going to see more popular policies when you have everyone allowed to vote. I think we saw that in Florida when they voted to allow people who finished serving their sentences for crimes to vote again, as they can in most of the country. I think that's very important. I think we should do everything possible to get more people to vote. And that's exactly the opposite of the way that many Republicans feel.
The Republican Party in California was just devastated after the midterm elections. Republicans lost so much political power in California. Among their complaints was that the California Democrats were far too successful at getting young people to vote and getting more people to vote, which they didn't like, which really, I think, illustrates the point you were just making.
Yeah. I mean, we had huge amounts of voting. In my election district here in New York City, we'd crossed 1% at 10 after 6 in the morning on this past election day.
Now, I want to pick up on what you were saying earlier, which is that this is a kind of bill that you would expect people to complain about privately, but not publicly. And I think how important is the strategy involved here? That in a way, the Democrats are daring the Republicans to come out and campaign against this or vote against this. Because, in forcing the Republicans' hands, the Democrats force them to go on the record, right, against these anti-corruption measures.
I mean, I'm not the political strategist, but yeah, I think Democrats stand up and say what they want and say what they stand for. And if Republicans are against them, they can be against them. If they're for them, they can be for them. Everyone can stand up and say what they want to say. And yeah, these things will come to a vote in the House and we'll see what happens in the Senate. Maybe it'll never even be considered by the Senate under the Republican leadership, but I hope that's not the case.
A big part of what the Republicans achieved when they controlled the White House and both branches of Congress was a tax reform law that was passed last year that I know that your organization has worked very hard to expose who it's actually benefiting. And I'm wondering if you are hoping that the Democrats will also take that issue on and not allow the version of the new tax reform bill, 2.0, if you will, to come to fruition, or even to roll back parts of that tax, if not all of that tax reform law?
Well, yeah, I mean, quite a bit of it. I mean, a lot of things. The way our tax system works now this year is quite different than the way it worked last year because of that Republican tax bill. And yeah, we stand for a few basic concepts. People who make more money should have higher tax rates than people who make less money, not the other way around. People who get their income, like me, by staying home and just earning investment income and seeing it pile up, should not pay lower tax rates than people actually go out and work for a living. It's workers who make America great, not people who stay at home and invest their money. I believe there's a lot of things wrong with our current tax system, and I'd like to see the Democrats change that, and we'll see what happens.
Some have also suggested that the Green New Deal that some of the newer Democrats, especially Democrats who identify as Democratic Socialists like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are championing. I mean, given the news that we heard about GM laying off 15,000 workers and closing 5 plants across North America, there couldn't be a better time for something like a Green New Deal. And it remains to be seen if the Democratic Party as a whole will also put their weight behind that, tackling both climate change and the economy in one fell swoop.
I hope so. Yeah. I'd like to see more federal government money behind improving our infrastructure, and like it done in ways that are, that are friendly to the economy and the ecological benefit to our country. I think that can be done. I think it should be done. I think it will help our country if it is done. And yeah, so I agree with Ms. Ocasio-Cortez.
And of course, there's always money for things like funding the military and giving tax subsidies to the very wealthiest. But you constantly hear, especially from Republicans, that there's not enough money for things like a Green New Deal, or not enough money for public campaign financing, or not enough money for single payer health care, right?
We live in the most wealthy system that's ever been existed in the face of this earth. There is enough money to do what we want to do. It's just a matter of us having the political courage and political will to decide what it is we want to do. The people who are against it, it's not a lack of money. It's because they're against doing those things. There are people who just don't want to use some people's money paid by rich people in their taxes to pay for things that benefit other people because they think it's just wrong, or they're very greedy. But our country has plenty of wealth and plenty of money, and we can afford all of those things. The budget deficit number did not come from God written on stone tablets. It came from a bunch of 20-something-year-olds in the U.S. House office buildings who wrote some numbers on a piece of paper. We can change the numbers. We can do more things. Our nation's wealth can be spent the way that the people, through their elected representatives, decide to spend it.
Well, Morris, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I certainly hope that we'll see something come of H.R. 1, this very large and ambitious anti-corruption bill. It also certainly depends on good media coverage of this issue, right?
Well, thank you for doing what you're doing. This is how we're going to make progress, is by talking about it.
And give out a website for Patriotic Millionaires.
Sure. Patrioticmillionaires.org. You can find out all about our group. You can get our book about taxes, and you can see what we're doing.
And we link to that from our website. Thanks so much, Morris.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
You too. Morris Pearl is chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, a group of hundreds of high net worth Americans committed to progressive financial policies. We've been discussing H.R. 1, the new anti-corruption bill that Democrats are pushing as one of their first acts in the new year. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.